This podcast is sponsored by FHE Health and their Shatterproof program for first responders. So excited to have my next guest back on the show, my good friend Bridget Truxillo, former law enforcement, now attorney representing first responders. We're going to talk about the stressors of legal challenges, legal problems, and your mental health. Bridget Truxillo, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the CJ Evolution Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick. If you are a first-time listener, welcome. We know you're going to love the show. Long-time listener, welcome back. And to all you first responders out there, thank you for what you do. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and loved, and above all, be safe.
What makes Shatterproof a very unique program is it's one of the only programs in the country that first responders can go to that is 100% all first responders. Everybody's in pretty bad shape when they get here. And then 30 days later, when you can see the transformation and the difference in people when they've had 30 days of counseling, working with therapists, working with a psychiatrist, getting the neuro treatment, doing the breath therapy that's done here. The transformation that happens with the clients is really humbling to be able to work around and see, because people are getting better here. And it just shows that there's a need for the first responder community to deal with behavioral health issues and take them seriously and offer treatment to people that may need help out there. They should be afforded the ability to come get help when they need help. It has gotten better, but we still have a long way to go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my good friend back on the show, Bridget Truxillo. Former law enforcement officer in Florida. She now resides in Texas, and she was the first SWAT operator, female SWAT operator in her agency. And now she's a very successful attorney working a lot with first responders. Bridget, welcome.
Hi, I'm happy to be back. Although I feel you and I actually talk regularly, so I feel
like I know we
kind of talk all the time.
Yeah, we talk a lot and we text a lot and check in and, you know, shooting the shit. How's it going?
Good, you know, in the great state of Texas, which I have to be honest, it feels weird to say that because I'm not from Texas and I don't consider myself a quote unquote Texan, but I have lived here. I've lived here twice, but this time it's been since 2013. So almost 11 years. So it's been a long time, but Texas is a great state. But like Florida, I think they're both land where you are now, that both are land of opportunity. You know, great economy, great places to work. Lots of, you know, both states very pro law enforcement, which I'm so thankful.
Yeah, I was going to say they're very pro law enforcement.
I was talking to somebody the other day out of Chicago, and we were talking about the issues. And I was like, look, you know, part of your problem is you're in a place that's very different when it comes to support in your environment for law enforcement. I mean, you know, the way that they handle issues, the way that they handle problems that from an agency perspective is different because, you know, where I worked in Florida as a cop and then, you know, living in Texas, but both is, you know, it's very much going to be innocent until proven guilty as a cop versus in other communities where it's very anti-law enforcement. Mm-hmm. The other way around, which is so sad. And yeah. I guess we should say, for anybody that doesn't know me, I am an attorney now. And I specialize in representing law enforcement in employment related matters. So like, yes, I was the only female member of SWAT team. And that's the reason why I'm not in law enforcement anymore, because that could be all the things that you expect it to be. Like, nobody physically assaulted me. I certainly would have gone for a good old kick if that would have happened.
Yeah. I would expect you to do that.
When they least expected it, but you know, a lot of other issues, and it was hard. And it's not that even though I chose to quit, I didn't feel like it was a choice I was making. And I felt like I was alone and didn't know who to turn to, that nobody understood what I was going through. And I didn't trust anybody in my department to talk about it. And certainly even as a female, there were no females I felt like I could go to for it. And so that's what I do now as an attorney, is I help people.
And you're very successful at it. But what do you tell people? And I'm sure, I don't know, people come to you all the time, especially females in law enforcement, mm-hmm. and in criminal justice, and they're struggling. Maybe there's not a case of harassment, you know, against a female, like a sexual harassment or something like that. But they're having a tough time assimilating because it's still a male-dominated profession, even though females are, thank God, are making headway and they're becoming more and more prevalent in law enforcement. But it's still male-dominant. And what do you tell females who feel like I can't fit in a male, you know, I'm having some struggles, I'm you know, they're making, you know, they're looking at me and all this other stuff. And what advice do you give them?
Well, that is a good question. Because the first things I will tell you is you will never assimilate. And I think that might be a surprising response to people. I could tell a story about when I left and what that was like. But what I know is that you're a female. And I'm not going to get into the whole what's a female thing. I'm just going to say.
Thank you.
You're a female.
Thank you. You don't have to
You'll always be a female. Your body's different than a man. You speak different than a man. You react different than a man. You should. And what I mean by that is I was always smart enough to know that I was never going to be able to fight a person the way you could fight a person because I am not male. And I guarantee you I was in better shape than almost everybody that I worked with. But that did not mean that I was going to try and go toe-to-toe in a fight with a dude. I had a girl say that to me one time when we were on SWAT. We had this PT test. And if you did, we had this great sheriff at the time. And if you did well on this PT test, you could either earn money, you could earn an extra day off or whatever, to really encourage people to try and to work out and be more fit. Anyway, I was standing around, the SWAT team would always be the ones help administer the test. And this girl, where she was waiting, and she said, there was this guy on the SWAT team with us, his name was Brian Gaynor. And he's former Marine. Total, what you would expect a Marine to look like big dude, thick neck. That is great SWAT operator. He's a big dude. And she said, just give me a minute. You know, give me like 30 seconds, just 30 seconds. And I could fight Brian Gaynor. And I looked at her and I said, not only will you get yourself killed, but you're going to get some of your coworkers hurt or killed who are going to have to come and save you. Like, please, I literally looked at her and said, please tell me you're joking. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And so to women, I would say, you're always going to be different, and different is fine. Now, of course, it's not okay if your agency treats you less than or different than, or like my experience and a lot of people, not just women, specifically as it relates to men for the purpose of this question is you can't be treated less than or worse than or different than just because you're a female. Like,
because that's discriminatory. And that's just discriminatory.
That is discrimination. You can't do that. It's called disparate treatment. That's a legal term of art. And like in my situation, like, did I make a mistake? Sure. But does my mistake warrants a letter in my file and 6 months probation and can't do this or can't do that? Then it should be the same for that guy who makes the same mistake. Like, and that's what I think people will also suffer through is like, well, but I did make a mistake. They're right. Except that you still can't be more punished than anybody else. You can't be raked over the coals every single time.
And this happens a lot in agencies.
Happens all the time.
Not just with women. I think it probably happens more to women, but with men too.
Men too. But I mean, I have a couple clients right now who were having a medical issue, either hurt on the job and they're in like a worker's comp issue, or one was having an addiction issue and he got some time off. And sadly, I mean, you know this in the world that you work in at Shatterproof is you have like, once you trigger FMLA leave, you have some serious and strong federal protections.
Absolutely.
In that.
Absolutely.
And let's say you get re-injured and you get FMLA leave again, or you need to go, you're not ready, you come back too early from treatment and you got to take FMLA, get FMLA leave again. And what sadly happens all too often, and from men and women in the department, so that they'll literally say stupid things like, you better not go out again or it's going to be bad for you. Like, you can't say that. You can't say, if you take FMLA leave again, which you are qualified to do, it's a federal protected right, I'm going to punish you if you do it. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, I hope it's recorded, because that is a smoking gun.
Is it just people are stupid, or is it just people are uneducated? They're just uneducated. Both, probably.
It's both. You know, that's a good way to say it, because I do try and be positive Polly about things and not Debbie Downer. That's a lot of what I try and do with all the content that I put out, is I just want you to know what the law is. And I don't teach law school classes. I teach you like useful gut response reactions. Like, I've been saying this a couple of times lately. If you want to, you know, when you do your firearms training and you do it over, and you're former military, so you know this all too well. You do it over and over and over and over again so that when you need it, you don't have to think about it. If you're gun jammed, you
muscle
can
muscle memory.
Thinking, yeah, the muscle memory. Well, I want, that's what I want you to know if you follow along with the information I put out, or if you get on my newsletter, which yes, I'm plugging it, is because I want you to have the information so that as soon as that happens, you think, whoa, whoa, you can't do that. And know that I'm not saying you got to go burn the department down when it happens. I'm saying that's not right. You should know what's supposed to happen. Here's what your options are, and then give you answers so that you can decide. Because I don't want you to ever be in a situation like I was, where I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to turn to and end up quitting. Or much worse is that there's been like way too often. Number one is there's a female out of Austin Police Department who last fall committed suicide because she just had, it was a mental health issue that they didn't recognize. She started performing in a way she'd never performed before. And instead of them recognizing that it was a mental health issue, it was IA after IA and dinger and letter, reprimand. She ended up committing suicide and leaving two kids behind. Or I had a conversation and, you know, just so happens to be female, but I have clients that are male that are in deep, dark places. But a female I talked to, who's actually not a client of mine, she was an officer in Missouri. And she ended up reporting things, but it got so bad for her that she ended up attempting suicide 4 times before she finally, like, yes, she sued and she finally quit. And I, you know, of course, and now, of course, not surprisingly, she doesn't know if she ever wants to be in law enforcement again. And I don't blame her. I left thinking, screw all of you. I'll never do this. So, you know, I'll never do this again. And I wanted it to be the career for, I mean, I wanted it to be my whole professional life until I retired.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I think I can still help in the law enforcement world, which I think which I still think has positive impacts in communities, even if it's not my community. Because if I can help you alleviate worry that in this type of these legal problems are all consuming, then you do your job better, you make better decisions, which means you're better for your community, which means, you know, it just has such so many positive ripple effects.
Absolutely. I mean, I love it. I mean, because you're right. We were talking about this earlier. Before we started, you know, I mean, in terms of mental health and wellness, if I'm friggin' constantly worried about legal issues I have, criminal and civil or both, then obviously it's going to affect my mental health. You know, I'm going to be depressed, irritated, all the red flags. So that's something we really don't, you know, we hear about depression and all this other stuff but okay, what's the depression linked to? Well, a lot of the times with first responders, it could be legal issues. It could be divorce. It could be, you know, finance stuff, but which is where experts like you come in, because that all, you know, comes into the mental health, you know, a challenge aspect of things.
Yeah. You know, and I say this a lot, and even coming back to whether it's female trying to figure out how to make her way in the field or just anybody, but I think what I think lately, I've been thinking a lot about this job is hard. It just is. You deal with crap. You see crap. People hate you. I mean, I can remember so many times, anybody in law enforcement can, where somebody calls 911 because they need help. You show up and they open the door just ready to, I mean, cussing at you, spitting at you. And, you know, you're like, hold on a second. You called me. Like, what can I do for you? And they just hate you. I mean, it is just hard. And there's nothing you can do about that. You can't change anything about that. And if you're calling me because, and really what it has to do with is, well, I can't handle the job, well, then I can't change that for you. And I'm not going to sugarcoat that for you. And you know, and but certainly that's a conversation you need to get help for or talk through with somebody, because first of all, it's a job that can kill you. And so tactically, you need to make sure your head's in the game. And then secondly, is that is going to have even more, I mean, because it's a hard job. And if it's not something that you mentally have chosen and you're prepared for it, then it will eat you alive. And then, you know, you'll end up needing something like shatterproof. But the overlap of issues, I mean, I have a client out of Utah. His issue was more of a Brady Giglio issue, meaning he was put on a Giglio list and then now can't get a job.
Now, real quick, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to, for the sake of an explanation. So for the listeners out there, most of you probably know what a Brady list is. But Bridget Counselor, can you explain what a Brady Giglio list is?
I'd be happy to. Or not happy to, really, because it makes me mad a lot of the time.
No, it's, I don't, I think it's a joke, but that's
just terrific. Now, yeah. I believe I'm a, like a constitutional dork. I became a cop partly because I believe in right and wrong. I believe in the black and white of you either broke the law or you didn't break the law, which is kind of funny that I was in the narcotics unit for 3 years, because as soon as you bust somebody on drugs, there's a gray area of where you're going to say, okay, well, you won't be charged if you can just help us go up.
Exactly. You're going to be our CI now.
But ultimately, you're either going to help us with that. You still broke the law. So black and white, there's consequences. So, and so Brady and Giglio are two different U.S. Supreme Court cases that in part define the rights of a criminal defendant in trial, because you don't want somebody going to prison who didn't commit the crime, and or that crime, like, you know, is it murder or is it manslaughter? So you want to be able to prove the elements. And if there's anything that someone can do to clear their name, or in other words, something called exculpatory evidence, then the prosecution is required to turn that over. And so that's where Brady Giglio come from. So it's either a Brady list, a Brady Giglio, whatever. What happens with it is federal law. It's a federal case law, not a statute. It's just federal case law. And then, but it's up to the states as to how they
interpret it. Yeah.
And really it's up to the specific district attorney, because I'm only aware of two states. Anybody out there that, if I'm wrong, I'm not going to list them right now because I'm having an old lady moment. I can't remember which states those are, but there are two states that have laws about how it's implemented, meaning that the cop gets notice of being on the list and there's a procedural process to get to appeal it. Two states out of 50 who have a procedural notice process. That's it, which means that you can be put on this list and they don't have to tell you.
Don't even know it.
You may never know it. You just can't get a job. And eventually you may find out. Like, I have somebody I talked to out of, I think, Illinois a year and a half ago, or he managed to actually get another job. But he ended up finding out from a reporter, got a call one day saying, hey, what do you think about being on a Brady Giglio list? And he's like, what are you talking about? And anyway, that turned out why he couldn't get a job. And long story short. So you have these DAs who will do it for ridiculous reasons.
And usually it's because of, like, you know, credibility issue, truthfulness, things like that. But like you said, Bridget, I mean, I've seen people on the list that they really didn't. It was more used as like a punishment.
Here's an example that a client worked a night shift and up all night, you know, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., had to go to court the next morning. So all day long in court. While he was at court, a fight broke out in one of the courtrooms, so he had to help, you know, so an adrenaline dump with that. So they helped the bailiffs and contain this fight. So then he tried to lay down for like an hour on a cot at the department before his next 7 p.m. shift started. Went on a call, he made a mistake. Like he one of those cities where it's like city, or township, whatever, if you're in Jersey. It wasn't Jersey. But he got a call to help a neighboring jurisdiction, called a sergeant, say, sergeant, you know, can I do this? Didn't hear from the sergeant, crossed their line, helped and came back. Sarge said, you shouldn't have done that. You should have waited for me to get like explicit permission. He's like, you're right, I'm sorry. But then they looked at the video and they're like, well, the sergeant called you. And he says, where was your phone? He says, I don't know, it was in my car or something. So they looked at the body cam video and it showed that he had his phone in his hand and that he saw the sergeant. It showed like the sergeant calling his phone.
Sure.
We put him on a Brady Giglio list for that. And he's like, holy crap. He says, I literally just didn't remember. And so it's a fact that he had been awake for 36 hours and had an adrenaline dump after he'd been awake for 20, you know, for over 24 hours. He'd been awake for more than 36 hours. And that's not a Brady Giglio issue. He said, you're right, I made a mistake, I'm sorry. And then
and there should be a way to appeal.
Said, I'm sorry, I should have waited for the sergeant. And they said, okay, don't do it again. But then some lieutenant saw this video and said, wait a second, you lied. And he's like, no. I really just didn't remember it that way. And I wish I could just roll back in time and say, like, I had been on duty for, I mean, close to 48 hours by that point. So I'm actually trying to get like professionals who've done research on sleep deprivation for law enforcement to show how that affects memory, to try and say, here's all the reasons why you should take this guy off this Brady Giglio list. But I've already talked to the DA and he's like, yeah, I feel bad for the guy, but you know, you lie. It's like, he didn't lie. Mm-hmm. So these poor guys. So I have a client out of Utah who got put on this list for stupid reasons, has nothing to do with his truth telling whatsoever. He got fired for violating social media policy. Didn't lie about it. Just posted something while he was in uniform. And he got fired for it. He said, "Did you do this?" And he said, "Yeah, it was dumb." He said, "Okay, well, you're fired. You violated policy." Somehow that got him on a Brady list. And
there's no
then,
appeal to this, right, Bridget? No, you can't appeal it.
Nothing. And that's what infuriates me. So that's why of the clients that pay me to help, like, I send letters to legislators explaining what Brady Giglio is, the effect that it has on the communities that they serve, that they are losing good cops. Like, no agency in this country is fully staffed right now. And now you're kicking out good cops because they didn't sleep for 36 hours and that's your fault? Are you kidding
me? Yeah.
But the one out of Utah is that he's on the list. He can't be a cop again. So he's not even my client anymore. And I keep emailing him to check on him because I get really worried because every time I talk to him, I feel like he's in a lower place. Like I don't think he's with his wife anymore. He has no money anymore because he cashed. It's just, he wants to be in law enforcement. And honestly, with some people that are my clients, the conversation becomes, we need to talk about if you really even need to be in law enforcement anymore anyway. I mean, sometimes that's the conversation. I don't regret leaving law enforcement because I can, the experiences and the work and specifically because of what I do now. I wish it hadn't happened the way it happened, but I don't think I would never be where I am now.
Absolutely.
Had I not been forced into that decision. And so I always think there's opportunity. I was in mediation with a client yesterday, and while we're waiting, it's in like Zoom and you wait, they go out of the room and they come back and we're talking, and she's like, "Honestly, I just really think I would like to be a therapist." And I said, "That's the most important thing that's happened out of this conversation all day. You know, I went from being a cop to going to law school that sucked so bad, not knowing what I wanted to do as an attorney, but ultimately I'm doing what I love as an attorney. I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't gone through the crap at the end of that job." So I think that's a lot of what although that sounds silly, like I'm not a career counselor. And yet that's what I know I bring to the table because, you know, I've been in this situation.
Well, and I think you have, and you know, you're experienced, and you did your time in law enforcement, but I think when it comes to, like, when I retired, I went through an identity crisis, but I, you know, like a lot of cops do when they leave. Yeah. But I think there's a big difference between going on your own terms, and going, you know, when it's not expected, or you get, you know, you get canned over this, you know, stupid post that you admit to, and now you're on a list and you're being blackballed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a big difference, and that hits you. That hits you hard, you know, especially when you can't go do a job anymore that you really love and you're able to.
Yeah. But, no, and you know, and the overlap and like you're in your world at Shatterproof, what you guys help with alcohol and drug addiction, is that there is a lot of overlap with when you need me and then that world. So there's overlap very much so in the world that you work in at Shatterproof with helping first responders with drug and alcohol addiction or both. And because unfortunately, by the time somebody gets to me, and especially with men in as first responders, and I'll just say law enforcement, that's most of my client or pretty much all right now. And that's the world that I know, is they just won't reach out until it's so bad. And then it's that, you know, like, it's never too late. I just want to say that it's never too late. Like, I don't care what it is. Call me and see if I can help, you know, call you to see if you can help, because I don't care how bad you think it is or how far you are down that road. It is never too late. But you know, that from the mental health perspective, and then that's how you and I first came together, is because I was to have another business, Protective Wellness, and wanting to get where I just wanted to do all that I could do to help law enforcement with their mental health. No, I'm not a mental health professional, but just having been there and knowing what the job can take from you on a daily basis. And so, but my wellness tool is helping you get the answers you need from a legal perspective so that you can do what you need to do for yourself and that you can eliminate one of the issues and then focus on the other. So if it is evolving into drug or alcohol issues, that, you know, focus on that. Especially if there's any overlap in you taking care of yourself for drug and alcohol and your agency's giving you a hard time about that. That's more than likely a federal violation and you should. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I view, like, you know, legal issues, the more you ignore your legal issues, whatever, for the listener, whatever those are, it's kind of like the more you ignore your mental health challenges, your addiction challenges, they just don't go away.
No.
You know, they're like the 800 pound gorilla in the room. Yeah. They're just going to get worse.
Yeah.
So that's why you need to reach out to Bridget, experts like her that can help you. They can do a consultation and say, all right, this is what I'm going to help you with. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't do criminal, do you, Bridget?
Do not.
I okay, don't, so it's just
criminal. Right. And hopefully you have a, if you have a union that you're in so that you can, if for no other reason, so that you can get legal representation in criminally related issues, so long as you stay within your scope of work, you'll get coverage from the union. And I was in a union. I'm a big fan of it. I think I was PBA in Florida. Anyway, I did it just so I could have, I was afraid that if I got accused of anything, I have an attorney who can represent me and I wouldn't have to go bankrupt or sell my house or my car or whatever to get representation. I know that depends on where you are in the country. I mean, I've had clients in, like, I think this South Dakota, there are no unions in the state to be spoke that could help with that. That blows my mind. But
yeah, some states are like that. Some agencies aren't union. I mean, and that's kind of some people get blown away about that. Just like some people get blown away that not all departments have pensions.
Yeah.
You know, pensions are a big thing in a lot of departments, but some departments don't have pensions. So every agency is different. Yeah. It blows me away about that state not having any type of union representation for their law enforcement.
Well, I learned not too long ago that Miami Police Department, everybody knows of it, it's a big department. They have no maternity leave policy. It's just use your vacation.
Isn't that kind of illegal? I mean, no. I guess it's not.
They're still protected by FMLA to get their job back.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than hope you have some vacation time saved up, there's nothing. I mean,
But even if I'm facing a criminal action or I get, arrested, I could still call you, Bridget, but even though you don't do criminal, but you could probably refer. I mean, you know a ton of attorneys, criminal attorneys out there.
Like, I don't do workers' comp work, and there's regularly overlap in what I do from an employment law perspective and workers' comp work, because a lot of times the department will then start retaliating against you or basically punishing you for taking your work comp or taking light duty for too long. Or, I mean, we all know this, like you don't know what somebody's going through, and you start giving this other guy or girl a hard time because they've been out for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and you think they're just milking it. Well, you don't know what they are or not.
Yeah, you don't know what they're dealing with. Upright
and walking doesn't mean that they don't have some other issue. I had a client who was on light duty for a year because one of the cases he had that he in patrol that he went on was had to do with a kid that had been locked in a closet for a long time. And he suffered from like severe PTSD from like being involved in that scene. And those are not physical injuries. That's not something you can see. And yet they are still significant. I mean, I know I've said this a lot. I will never unsee the brain matter of a two-year-old that I saw when I was a cop. And, but cumulatively, those type of incidents affect you bad. We all know this. Yep. It's a fact about law enforcement, but that is not a visible injury. And yet it's still an injury. So like, I don't do workers' comp. I had a guy out of Massachusetts that needed help. And it was in an area that it was very state specific. And so like, harassment, discrimination, retaliation, all that is based on federal law. The EEOC is a federal administration. I have a clients all over the country. I file their EEOC. But if it's a very state specific issue, or if you need to file in state court, I refer that out, or I just from the get go, I'll say, I'll help find you somebody. I mean, I got this guy in Massachusetts, and then within like an hour, I got him four recommendations for good attorneys in his area. And he's like, I can't believe you found this many people in such a short amount of time. Except that's what I've done in 15 years, is I've created a network of attorneys I know across the country that can help in a lot of different ways.
And you're licensed to practice in a couple different states. Right.
Four different states. I've taken four bar games.
Jesus Christ, Bridget.
Texas, Florida, New York, and Louisiana.
Wow. So Texas, Florida, New York, and Louisiana.
Those are the state. Yeah. So state specific laws and stuff I can do. But like I said, I have clients from Washington to Virginia to, I don't have that many in the Northeast just because of the union representation that they have up there. Chicago, Chicago is a very heavy, a strong area. And I got a female calling the other day from there. I mean, but It's interesting. I don't have any in the Northeast, and I don't have that many in the Southwest. But everywhere else,
everyone between. Yeah. And just for clarification, you do a lot of workplace harassment, discriminatory mm-hmm. issues, sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. And it's not just females. It's not just females. You work with men too.
I mean, more than half my clients are men. I mean, think about it. I mean, yes, what I do resonates with women a lot because, you know, it's apples and oranges. What women go through is very different than what men do. And yet it's still, I mean, two of my most active cases right now are men in law enforcement that were retaliated against primarily for FMLA related issues. And, you know, women only represent roughly 13% of law enforcement. So just by virtue of that, there's still more men out there that need help from me than women. Predominantly women proportionally face more issues, sadly.
I believe that, but yes, I
definitely men and women, and it is harassment, discrimination, retaliation. If it has anything to do with like FMLA, any federal, like ADA, there's a lot of new laws that came out that protect women, like maternity return, like return to work stuff. Although the state of Texas just recently ruled that one of those is unconstitutional, which kind of my state kind of pisses mm-hmm. me off.
So what would you recommend for, say, a female out there listening who is going through some sort of harassment at work? Obviously, reach out to you, reach mm-hmm. out to an attorney, get some advice. But in the interim, when they're, you know, they've reached out to you, or another attorney, they've given them advice, but they still have to be at the job. What advice would you give? Because I'm sure you get that question. What do I do? Because this doesn't happen overnight. I mean, nothing changes overnight.
You know, the way that I do my job is I do not look at this as, and a lot of attorneys do, they evaluate your case and they're looking at it as, is this a lawsuit? I am not that. I do not fit in that mold in any kind of, now, do I know what you need to get to a lawsuit? Yes, I do. Sure. I've been in litigation, civil litigation, my entire legal career. But what I look at it as, I know most cops, including myself when I was in it, is I didn't want to file a lawsuit. I just wanted it to stop. So sure. What can we do? Can we write a letter and detail all the violations that, like, look, I get, you know, like, we just want to put you on notice. This is what's happening. Here's why you shouldn't be doing that. We would love to have a conversation with you to resolve these issues before we have to take it any further. It's now, and sometimes, does it always work? No. And then you got to file an EEOC claim.
But it's documentation. Like, and I know that.
So
and
obviously, the first thing you need to do is, if you even think that you need somebody like me, you need to be writing it down. Number one, you've got to write this down, because if you ever want to do something about it, even if all I do is write a letter to your department, I need dates, times, incidents, people, names. And then the second one is, and you should have an attorney before you do this, is you're going to end up having to report it. You're going to end up having to report it to your agency and have somebody like me write a letter saying, look, let's start the conversation, or to file an EEOC claim for you. Almost every EEOC claim that somebody files that I get that they file without an attorney either gets rejected and is closed, or the EEOC gives them a chance to fix it. But you need somebody who knows what words to say, what phrases to check, certain phrases trigger automatically federal protections mm-hmm. within your department, where they're supposed to start doing things. And even if they don't, that'll just bad for them later. So the main thing is you want to be able to address it, but consult with somebody like me so that you know what to say. And then more importantly is that I then support you through that process, because it might get kind of crappy after you report that.
And well, that's why they need somebody like you for protection and, you know, retaliatory practices.
Yeah.
And so, but documentation, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. if it's not written down, it probably didn't happen. So write, document.
Right. I mean, all the time they'll say that the response back to our reports, our EEOC claim, is, well, you have no evidence of that. I'm like, actually,
no, we do.
All the dates and times and names and places that we included, like, I don't have to submit an affidavit for that at this point, but I'm putting you on notice. You better go talk to those people. So it's just really important that, and so I say, like, I offer ways to work with me where the first level is, I'll review your case. I'll tell you what I think is going on. And I will give you your plan of action is. We will have a meeting. I will review all your stuff. We will have a meeting. And then I say, here's the issues. Here's what they shouldn't have done, but here's what they did. And here's your, and I send you an email with your plan of action. And that's it. It's a very reasonably priced option. And then I don't have to do anything. I think that is such a huge step because you have answers. You feel like you start to take control again over an issue that otherwise feels all consuming. And then of course you can then pay me to do it for you. but I give that first option because I think that's a very important first step of being able to, from a mental health perspective, is to feel like you have some control and you have answers.
Well, and I like what you said, because you didn't put the priority, and that's why you're so, you know, awesome at what you do, is you didn't put the priority on, okay, is this a case or not? Is this, how much money am I going to make off this case? Instead of putting a more human touch on it, saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what, you know what I mean? Instead of just looking at it as just, you know, a price, you know, as, you know, I can make this much off this case.
My very first,
and I know you, so you're not like that, but a lot of attorneys are.
Oh yeah. And I don't blame them for that. That's their structure. That's how they've defined their firm. But it's because of my everything that my life has led up to now that I
know your background, you know, you're empathetic. Matters. You know, you've been through it.
Right. And one of the first conversations I have with clients is, what do you want? Like, what is it that you're wanting from this? Because some of it, I'm going to have to talk you off the ledge. No, you're not going to get $1 million. I'm just going to tell you, are there some verdicts out there in law enforcement related cases that maybe reach that high? Very few. But the majority of them is like, no, you're not going to get $1 million in front pay for a speculative raise that you never got. You know, and I explained to you all those things. But also, but what do you really want? Do you want a reinstatement? Do you want a promotion? Do you want somebody moved out of your department? I mean, there's so many things you can, but we really talk through it all. And then you get to the point, and I really help them understand what's possible. And I think that's a very important part of it too, is, you know, I think it's therapy, is talking through what you want, what you can get. So,
and if people want to reach out to you, how do they get a hold of Bridget Trexilla?
You can find me in all ways at my website, ladylawshield.com. That's the way that you can book a call with me. I do offer like conversations, consults to talk briefly about your case. That is it is a reasonable and nominal fee to have those initial consults. But if you're not ready for that, I have put out so much information. You can follow me on social media.
Great content.
You can click a link that I will send you, you know, I'll send you a bunch of content that you can read through. So, you know, sometimes you're not ready for me because you don't know. Sometimes you come to me and you're ready to pull, I don't want to say pull the trigger, but you're ready to click and pay. I'll say that. You know, a lot of people that come to me have heard me, they've read my stuff, they've followed along. And then when they have a problem, they like, no, I'm ready, let's go. And then sometimes they're not sure. So I offer the different options, but you can find all that at my website, the book a call link, social media links, all that. But you should sign up for the newsletter because you might not need me now, but you might need me later.
Bridget, you're awesome. Bridget Trexilla, amazing person, former Leo, an amazing lawyer. Thank you for being on. I'd love to have you back on, although I talk to you almost all the time, but you're just a plethora of knowledge. And again, for the listener out there who needs an attorney, or you're going through an issue in the workplace, please reach out to Bridget. Her information is going to be in the show notes. All right, my friend. Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Such an amazing person and good friend. If you want to see the video of this show, head over to YouTube, CJ Evolution Podcast YouTube channel. Until next time, everybody, be safe.